This is the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast. Today we have with us Dave Sobel. What's up, Dave? How's it going?
You know, it's like there's nothing going on in the security world right now. So, you know, it's just quiet out there.
It's all overblown, man. What are you talking about?
Exactly. Nothing to talk about at all, clearly.
But we can go to lunch now. Great.
Exactly. Well done. Well done, gent.
So I wanted to kick it off. If you want to introduce yourself, let anyone, you know.
Yeah, sure. Anybody who hasn't heard my blatherings before. So I'm Dave Sobel. I am currently head of MSP Radio and the host of the Business of Tech podcast. I spent about a decade as an MSP, did a small regional MSP, loved doing it, was super community involved, helped grow peer groups and wrote a book and at Microsoft MVP. I did all that stuff. And then I sold that business and I spent 8 years on the vendor side and I worked for RMM vendors. I was with Level Platforms for 2 years. I was with GFI, we became Logic Now. And then, of course, we got bought by this company no one has ever heard of called SolarWinds. And I was with SolarWinds 3 years post-acquisition, which is also a year post the IPO, because I wanted to go through that process and learn how that all works. And I left in October 2019, well-timed for those that are tracking that timeline. And now I am an independent analyst. And I looked at the media landscape and I said, you know what? There isn't a guy who's an analyst who looks at it from the MSP perspective. There's a lot of guys that are looking at it from an M&A, a lot of guys that advocate for vendors or sell vendor programs or all that stuff, but there's not somebody that says, I want to fight for the MSP. And I said, I'm going to do that. And that's been the podcast and what I've been doing since then, and obviously weigh in on things that are important so that I can offer another perspective.
So before we get to really the crap show of the month, what would you say from your 30,000-foot view, what do you feel the state of the MSP or MSSP is currently compared to, say, a year ago, 2 years ago?
Well, so it's a really interesting question because I would sort of smile and go, yeah, it hasn't changed much. And actually, that's some of the problem is that that actually things haven't changed a whole lot in a while. But I think the landscape around MSPs has changed. And I think that's the bit that concerns me more than anything else is it's new pressures that we're not used to talking about. I talk about the pressure on my show of what's happening with private equity and the investment of money, how the financial incentives of the game have changed. The market itself has changed. We did a great job of moving everybody to work from home, but now the world of work is very different and the kinds of technologies we should be looking at and the risks that are very different. But when I talk to MSPs, I'm hearing the same sort of stuff that I've been hearing for, I don't know, a decade. And it's the same answers. And I have to laugh and go like, well, guys, I think the market's changed. I mean, you know, call me crazy, but I spent all my time watching it and I think the market's really different. But the answers are the same. And I did a piece on e-commerce earlier this year that got everybody all riled up that I was pushing e-commerce as much as I am. And I'm just like, I'm just watching the trends, guys. That's how people buy now. And I go to MSP websites and nobody even offers me the opportunity to like book an appointment. Like everything is like, and I'm like, I'm just pushing you towards, I don't know what we were talking about 5 years ago, e-commerce wise, much less right now. So to your question, I think things are too much the same. And I think that's anytime you look at that, that's a market ripe for disruption. And so I'm looking saying, I don't like little, small, sub $5 million MSPs to get totally disrupted by something they don't see coming.
Yeah, to that fact, you know, I've went through and I still go through a lot of some marketing platforms and stuff, but like our website is very, very simple and very, very generic to a degree. We don't even have a phone number posted up on there. It's literally, here's a calendar link, schedule an appointment. We found that there's been so much more quicker adoption for communication than them picking up the phone, trying to get in touch with the right person, sending an email, say, yep, boom, here's my calendar, schedule something. It just worked, you know? Yeah. So
I practice what I preach. I mean, if you go to the businessof.tech is the podcast site, you know, the stories there, the links. MSP Radio is the business, right? Like that's the bit where I don't mind telling people I sell ads, like that kind of stuff. Like if a vendor wanted to work with me, they literally can go to my website. They can put what they want in their cart. They can check out. They can schedule a booking appointment with me. It's all e-commerce. That doesn't mean I won't happily talk to them, customize a deal, like do all of the high touch relationship selling, but if they know what they want, why wouldn't I sell it to them? And I think MSPs want to think that way more because that's where the modern buyer is at.
So before we get into some of the conspiracy theories that we've got a little bit about Kinsea,
yep.
I want to have a question that leads up to it. How do you think the financial stabilization of the MSP market is? Do you see I still see, at least on my IR side, the incident response side, I'm seeing a greater divide of people who are flourishing and making a ton of effing money and more MSPs, single man, that are really, really freaking struggling.
Yep. So let's be specific with the question, because I try and be a good analyst on that stuff. So you're asking specifically about the performance of managed services providers, IT services providers in the current market. And I would agree 100%. I think the divide between the haves and the have-nots is getting larger. Now, the last stat I looked at, it was still 93% of all solution providers are doing less than $5 million in revenue, right? But there is a growing bit between those that are performing, you know, $1, $2, $4, $5 million versus those guys that are still at the lower end. But more importantly, at least going into the pandemic, 25% of the market was break even or losing money. We've not got true updated numbers kind of post yet, but I'm expecting that to get worse, right? I think that so you've got a whole bunch of guys at the bottom that are not making any money, but you've got a bunch of guys at the top that are outperforming. I'm watching that split. And I look and say, like, there needs to be, from my perspective, to keep this healthy, I want to see more guys jump from the ones that are struggling into moderately successful and then eventually successful business.
How do you feel about the typical managed services versus a VAR type of setup, more time and material? Because I am seeing a lot of clients getting burnt out on bad experiences with an MSP.
Am I the only one who we lost? Steve, there?
Can you hear me?
We can hear.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear the whole question. That's why I wanted to, and I've got him all locked up.
So I've been seeing a great divide between customers wanting typical time and material, a VAR type relationship. You sell them the services or the software, and then they'll buy some block time from you, versus going traditional managed services. Not that there's a definition for managed services in any way, shape, or form. And that, to me, has been driven by bad or poor experiences that those customers have had with MSPs in general. And my second part to that question is based on a video you recently put out that I saw last night. I think the RMM needs to die. But I'll let you get into that later.
Two big questions. Let's do the first, and then we can talk about the RMM itself. So I always start this discussion with my core idea of what I think IT services is, because I think this value statement has never changed. There is an incredible value in a company helping another small business, mid-sized business, with their technology needs and to be successful with technology. I think that core value is 100% strong. And by the way, stronger than ever, because the technology is, I mean, work from home, dispersion of work, all of these factors are all technology driven. So I think that space is incredibly important. What I also think is that many providers have over-rotated on these basic concepts that are pushed by the software vendors of, well, you should sell them patching, you should sell them antivirus, you should sell them backup, you should sell them this long list of just of kind of basic technologies. And as things have progressed into the cloud, into the new way of working, those core bits are not nearly as important. And a lot of customers are kind of wising up to, but I actually want help with my technology. And they've been burned by somebody who will say, well, I'm going to take care of all your technology problems, right? And and then they slide across their gold, silver, platinum, paper, quartz, bullshit, plans. And some customer signs on and it doesn't actually do what it said on the tin. And so they're looking going, I don't want another of those. I still want the core value. And an easy way to just check the core value, if you're a customer, is say, well, I'm just going to pay you for your time. Like, they can make sure that I'm paying for the time on the help that I want. It's a simple measurement for them to understand something they don't understand, right? And so it makes it really easy for them. It's just, well, if you help me, I will pay you. and if you don't, I won't, because they've overpromised these things they don't deliver. So that's my take to that is I still think there are guys that are doing what I might call a managed services contract, meaning they are delivering a set amount of services for a set price each month. And they have customers that love them for it, right? Well, but everything I just talked about is not all the garbage that often we providers and are encouraged by the vendors to latch on to. Right. And what we're seeing right now, and in a way, it leads to your next question, like the death of the RMM, is we've got this push by well-funded private equity backed companies that are looking to make money off this space that are selling a dream, right? You buy this tool, you are instantly a managed services provider. And here we are a decade later where the myth has caught on and everyone thinks, I must own this tool to be a managed services provider and be profitable. And everything I talked about a minute ago from the value statement does not include any of those tools. They might be useful, right? They could solve the problem. You could build your practice that way, or you could not. And where you get into my last bit, and I'll lead to ask you more questions, is like, when I project out to the forward way I think about the future, right? And true cloud services, true dispersed work, where this stuff is all, I just sort of look and go like, the RMM is a relic of the past. It's solving a problem from 20 years ago with code from 20 years ago that doesn't include any of the stuff that I need in the future. Here's my basic statement of, find me an RMM that includes the concept of people, like users as the center of the universe, not devices.
Intune.
Well, yeah. And by the way, I did a whole video going, I think Intune might be the future, guys. Like, I'm really looking at this Intune thing, and I think they've architecturally got the idea. I think there's something to Microsoft's approach. And by the way, though, I put that out and everyone was like, oh my God, I'll never give up my RMM. I'm like, I don't know, guys. I think this isn't going to work. You know, so anyway, so I'm with you. I think the RMM had a great run. I made money on mine when it was part of my managed services product, but you know, past performance is not an indicator of future results.
So Dave, I'd like to get more into the RMM in a bit, but before we dive into that hole, you brought up something in an opening statement I thought was interesting on how MSPs aren't changing to keep up with the times, right? There hasn't really been a change that you've noticed. And is there, who can we blame for that, right? Do we feel like the vendors or the MSP community? Because we are a pretty tight-knit community where we share a lot of ideas, right?
Right, but that can result in groupthink, right?
Yeah,
everyone's saying the same thing over and over. So, look, I ultimately believe, and I believe we've got to own this stuff. MSP owners are smart guys that can deliver what they want, and they have to own their own destiny. They have to own their own business strategy. But what I also want to observe is that the market has changed in 20 years. Right? Let's look at the vendors, many of the vendors that supported us. They're the big four, right? I like to talk about the big four in this space because they're very influential. Big four providers, you know, Datto, ConnectWise, Kaseya, and Enable, right? 20 years ago, we get in the DeLorean and we're hanging out with the founders of all those businesses who don't work there anymore, right? Like, who were small entrepreneurs, right? I have like Arnie Bellini, you've got Austin McCord, you've got, you know, really innovative, interesting guys that are building solutions for their customers. And it's this, you know, dynamic entrepreneurial environment. And they grew, and they grew successfully. And I have a whole video for investors on how the business model is like really good on the vendor side, and they make a ton of money and they grow really well. Like, and supplying tools is a really good thing. So they got bought, right? Like, they got a bunch of money from private equity guys, but private equity is a different engagement style and business model than a founder driven growth model.
You know what I said? I think a founder driven growth model is really about getting that buyout from the PE guys. But yeah, that aside, what I want to ask you, because I think you came from the MSP side and you also came from the vendor side, who drives the MSP market? Who's in control of it right now, or has been in control of it for the last 20 years?
So, okay, this is a really great question, because I'm going to say it the way, MSPs,
it's not us.
MSPs are always in charge, unless they cede their control. And right now they have ceded their control because they are not willing to take risks or are voting with their dollars in a way that matters. And by the way, and I say because I have been part of the machine, right? They have a large number of people on the vendor side who are paid very well to keep that the way that it is. Right, to build communities, to invest in conferences, to run around the country and buy everybody beer.
I have a question for you. Sorry to cut you off there.
Yeah.
Because something you just said, you're a businessman, correct?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Capitalist. Like,
we'll get along swimmingly. When you call someone your partner, there's an equity split usually there, right?
And a risk assumption, yes.
And shared risk to a degree.
Yes.
You, what irks me about this industry is all these vendors calling us their partners and we have zero equity, zero stake in anything.
And by the way, I did a whole video on risk assumption because by the way, but I'm going to tell you here, this is my point of, and you let them, you let them call you partner every single time you let them do it. Right. Because you're the customer, they have a direct relationship with you, the customer. They love calling you partner. It's a brilliant move. The vendor side of this is very smart, right? It is driven by a lot of people that are very smart. And by the way, that's the name of the game. I'm a true capitalist at heart. Everybody is to build their financial incentives of the way that they're going to grow their business. I do not blame these vendors at all.
I'm their partner. They love me. Kaseya Cares was built to save me. Or yes, their partners so that right. They can continue paying the Kaseya bills, make it through and make it all the way through COVID so they can keep paying those bills. Is that something you would agree with?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
So and it wasn't altruistic.
None of this is altruistic. It's everybody is building these machines that are called businesses to generate profit, right? That's the point. And that's okay. I'm totally comfortable with that. Right. Yeah. What I'm telling the MSP community is MSPs, I really want you to start asking the question of how are they making money? What risk do they have in there? I don't disagree that cybersecurity, for example, is a problem. But what I'm also going to point out is there's a whole bunch of vendors selling you solutions with no risk assumption.
Mm-hmm.
No risk assumption.
I want to push back on that for a second because contracts are great, but you could sue anybody. I could sue you for wanting your power glove behind you if I wanted to and spend the money.
You could, right.
But let's talk about risk here. Let's talk about Kaseya specifically. They had 5 or 6 vulnerabilities disclosed in April by the Dutch firm.
Yep.
And that number could be off, so please don't quote me on that.
Right.
They put a web application firewall in front of their SaaS platform
that
has seemingly mitigated the Reval attack on Kaseya-hosted VSA.
Okay, all right.
They left their on-premise partners out to dry by not informing them of a vulnerability or saying, hey, let's close up some ports. Let's maybe shut these down while we roll out a patch. To me, that is gross negligence.
Okay.
How would you rate that risk that is now borne by the MSP and their customers in spite of any contracts that may have been signed?
So look, I'm gonna push on this and sort of say like, yeah, but I think running your own on-prem server is like I think it's freaking crazy.
Oh,
like
I agree. Let's take that out of the equation because there are people running their on-prem server. So I'm more interested in focusing on the fact that you have however many hundreds or thousands of partners running on-prem servers who were not given the heads up by the publisher of this product that there's remote code execution or whatever the vectors of attack were.
Okay. So, but I don't want to quite let go without a complete statement on the look, if you're running an on-prem server in 2021, you are just assuming so much risk that I just can't. I will answer this, but I just need to reinforce you are just assuming so much risk. I've been thinking about it that in this scenario recently where I'm the kind of guy that would get called as like an expert witness, right? Like that's kind of my role in the universe, I guess, is that you take an analyst like me. And if somebody called up and said, Dave, we're hiring you as an expert on managed services, I'd go, thank you for the contract. And then they would say, one of your jobs is to, we're the end customer and we're suing our MSP. Thought about that scenario. And they said, and the end customer is suing the MSP saying, we think it is not best practices to run an on-prem server. Dave, you're an expert. What do you think? And I think I'd have to say, yeah, I think you're right. I think that the MSP is negligent.
Okay, so
now let's move up the chain, right? Now, do I think that an organization like Kaseya should disclose that stuff? I think morally they should. I think disclosure law allows them to do what they want right now.
I mean, forget law, because law, I think, can be interpreted, right? I think let's talk about doing the right thing. The right thing would have been, hey, guys, shut down your VSA platforms. We can't tell you why when they, you know, do their scans and they see, because we all know the licensing portion of these things give a lot of telemetry.
Yeah. To their credit, they did that though. Like to their credit, like, and because I want to be really.
I'm talking pre-incident. I'm talking this vulnerability was disclosed, I think, the 4th of April.
Right.
Let's say you needed a week or two to vet that out, proof of concept that say, shit, this is bad.
Right.
By the beginning of May, on-premise partners should have been told, or whenever they put their WAF in place, they should have said, hey, we need to shut this down. And they should have put on the afterburner in developing these patches. It took SolarWinds 2 days to issue an Orion patch for a far more elegant supply chain breach. It took Kaseya 10 days or 9 days to issue a patch or patches, despite the fact they've supposedly been working on those patches since April.
Okay, I think you can be 100% right, and I can be 100% right at the same time.
I'm always right sometimes.
Well, fair enough. But this is where it gets sticky, right? I think everything you've just said, I would nod and agree to, and I'm not gonna argue it. This is my statements of you have to understand the financial incentive of the vendor on the other side.
Oh, I do, especially pre-IPO. I get it.
Right.
I'm talking about, you know, people, all these vendors, they want to say, we are partner centric. We are partner first.
Yeah, right.
None of them are. And I think this is our time as being on this side of it to call them out and say, hey, you're not our partner. We are your customers. You need to treat us better.
Look, I always start with it. Businesses don't have emotions. Like businesses are not living things. They are entity. They are legal entities that are structured to create a thing, sell it, and make money, right? Like that's what they do.
That's what we are. I agree.
So we're trying to apply morals, right, to a non-living thing. And look, I think the humans that work at these organizations are good human beings, right? Like I don't sit here and think that these are bad people. I mean, I worked there, right? I've worked with these people. I don't think they are like sitting there like Dr. Evil stroking the cat, like plotting to take over, like.
Have you seen Fred Vicola's video? I kind of think he might have a cat or a dog that he's petting. By the way, being evil
not only have I seen the video, I've commented it on my own, right? Like I broke out some of the statements. But I don't think he's a bad, like I literally just look at that and I say, I don't judge him as a bad human being. He is executing the business plan that he is incentivized to do, which is around customer growth, customer retention. I've not directly asked him this question, and I keep telling MSPs to ask them this, ask the executives how they are incentivized around protecting their customers from these issues, how they are incentivized. Let me point out my favorite thing to quote on this is, you're right, all the guys at SolarWinds like moved at a certain speed, right? They also received their bonuses for 2020. Those executives cost the US taxpayer millions of dollars, but their board of directors and their incentive structure said, great job, guys. Here's your bonuses. So what did they learn? Keep doing what you're doing, right? Because you are rewarded on what we've incentivized you on.
Well, hold on there. You know, with SolarWinds, it's an interesting thing that you just brought up. I wouldn't just blame the board of directors. I'd blame the government. They halted trading on their stock Monday morning.
And in disclosure, I am a SolarWinds shareholder, right? Like that was part of my compensation I have not sold all my shares. So I still
want your split you want your Enable shares that vest in a couple weeks or a couple months because today's the last day.
I like to always quip, I am not a stupid man. Right. But look, disclosure, I like to like everyone to know. I always talk about how I get compensated so people can understand what my motivations are. right? And that's to the point is I completely agree. But by the way, this is why I cover on my show, I talk about regulation so much, right? Because that is the structure that governments put forth to set the guardrails of playing the game. And what's interesting to me is every time I have the regulation conversation, I get a bunch of MSPs who go, I don't want the government involved in my business. And I'm just like, guys, this is how the game is played. You set the government sets the guardrails, and we as good capitalists go at each other inside the playing field. That's the way that it works. And because my example on this always is chemical companies, right? The cheapest way to dispose of waste, if you're a chemical company, is dump it in the water. Just like dump it down the river. It'll flow away. Most of us like clean drinking water, right? Generally, I don't want like toxic green three-eyed fish kind of environment from The Simpsons. So the way we manage that is regulation. We could have a totally smart debate over what that regulation should be, how that's called politics, right? Right. But you got to have some guardrails. And that's where we do. So anybody who says, well, I don't want the government involved at all, it's like you're missing the game. The game is we set up the rules. We fight it out within there. There should be, we're always debating the rules. I'm a baseball guy. We're discussing, we're moving the mound, right? Because like that's the way this works. So I'm back to where's the responsibility? We as solution providers, and I'm including myself because I get paid by solution providers, need to focus on addressing this and own our own responsibility in all this.
Okay, so we're going to take that one full on here. And okay. I've been waiting to get this one in. So
cool.
We're going to take this thing back. And you know me, I'm an asshole, but you know, I do.
You're our asshole.
I am your asshole.
Every group needs one.
Yes. Welcome. I am here. So, I mean, I come from the old school. You know, I don't look like I'm a really old fart, but you know, I come from the old school stuff. You know, I was in the Marine Corps with ONI and I worked for Black Box and, you know, just doing all this stuff. So I'm used to walking over and seeing all my servers flicky flashity and doing all this other stuff.
Yep.
But I do agree with you to a degree. Having an on-premise solution to a degree is suicidal. But
okay,
for the people that we do a lot of incident response for, there are regulations in place that you cannot have things in the cloud. Now, give me a moment because I know you're going to jump in there. I know how you are.
Yeah.
The lawyers are definitely want to keep their server, their Exchange servers on-premise, primarily because they know when a subpoena comes down the line, you know, somebody can subpoena Microsoft 365 and they don't ever have to be notified of it. But if you have an on-premise Exchange, you've got that. Also, mm-hmm. To talk about the MSP space, almost none of the fucking RMMs or the PSAs will give you true damn logging. Like I have even, in full disclosure, I do a lot of pen testing. I do. And this is the one thing I beat them up on all the time is simple right. fact of I can go to your PSA or your RMM and I can start brute forcing the hell out of it. When does your RMM, your PSA start saying, hey, you've got a freaking problem here. Somebody that you and I both know, Steve Taylor with Rocket MSP, he was on one of these things and I was brute forcing his freaking accounts the whole time, driving him nuts. Why? Because I could. Right. And, you know, they're looking at us like, oh, how do I stop this? They're like, we don't know. You know, at least with an on-premise solution, you have ways of doing mitigation. If you can't do it in-house, definitely get with some sort of external partners, you know, Black Cubed and Black Point and maybe Purge, or God forbid I'm saying them, but, you know, at least you're looking to somebody to help secure your stack. Because I get it. You know, you don't know if somebody's trying to breach your door.
Use Rocket Cyber. So, they protected everybody.
Eric, I want to break. By the way, I love these kinds of bits because I always make this statement. I keep saying it because I want people to hear me on this. Is I do not have to be right. Okay, like I don't go into these discussions to win or to prove. I go in to make sure we're having intelligent conversations and people make their own calls about the risk. If you're informed, you're good to go. In my mind, you've kind of lumped three things together, and I want to break them out a little bit. Okay, the first is you talked about like lawyers and customers. Laws are behind, right? Laws are behind. We can help fix that. We, the IT provider space, are the people that understand the application of technology and how it can be done, and we should be part of the discussion about helping lawmakers make those laws make sense for the modern world, right? That I love to cite an example recently about the negotiations over Brexit and encryption technologies, because this is an example of how this all happened. They were doing the negotiations with the EU, British government, European government. They knew they needed to include encryption, right? They knew that was like, well, we should include some encryption standards. So what did they do? They went to the last law that they wrote in 2008, the last time they did a treaty, and they cut and paste the encryption section into the new Brexit negotiations, which is why like Netscape Navigator is included in the treaty that's signed between the two governments.
And before you get on to your next point, I just want to interject there. I see what you're saying, but when we look at our own internal government with CMMC, you know, this is supposed to be the shining poster child of new cybersecurity.
Yep.
But the head of CMMC is now indicted, and there's been now the C3PA or CA3, whatever the hell it is, the auditor is now being charged with bribery. You know, we are looking for people to actually lead the way, and they're corrupt as shit.
But my point is what we own the bit that we can control. Where are the MSPs, the IT service providers in this space that are getting involved? I can't even figure out what trade association is the one that we deal with. CompTIA doesn't do lobbying for us anymore. So like, I'm looking around going, I really would like to help. I talk about this stuff. Who would I partner with? And until we own this problem ourselves and get involved, it's left to others. Don't disagree with that. I'm just pointing out that I think we should be more involved in regulation than we are, because most of the this space is just not.
So that's my question. I got a question for you, Dave.
You
came from the vendor side.
Yeah.
And this centers on zero knowledge and vendors data mining us and our clients and selling that data. What do you think it would take to get the RMM and PSA vendors to adopt a zero knowledge architecture on the platforms?
Business motivation to do so.
Right? And what would that? Okay, what would that be?
Yeah, what would it look like?
For example, a group of MSPs that simply will not purchase from them if it's not included. I sort of smile and go, guys, you're the customers.
But we have no loyalty to each other. We are the first person to tear each other down and say that MSP is shit. Come on board with me.
But this is what trade associations are for, right? This is why you get involved with an organization that advocates on your behalf as a group on the things that you agree on together. Like, should we do this
to PAX 8, or should we go?
But there are other vendors.
I'm just being facetious. I think it has to be by us for us.
100% agree. I am 100% with you, by the way. I'm screaming from the rafters. It has to be you guys. Like, it has to be. It literally can't even be guys like me, right? Like the guys that are it literally has to be you guys doing it. The people that are actually operationally MSPs.
But see, here's part of the problem. And I'm going to circle back a little bit to kind of segue into still staying in compliance before we go down some other rabbit holes. Because I just don't want the whole thing just to keep going in a thing.
No. We got a lot here.
There's a lot here. We can go on for a while. But, you know, like I was saying, you know, the CMMC was supposed to be our poster child. But, you know, what do you think? I mean, we've already showed what kind of a dumpster fire that Joe Biden is doing with this whole executive order. That is for the federal government. It even states it in that is for the federal government in his executive order. So we are starting to see, and I'm not seeing a lot of news. And I even went through some of your stuff because, yeah, I've been so busy. I haven't been keeping up with even some of your podcasts.
I'm so hurt.
But we've seen Texas come out with their own pretty rigorous freaking cybersecurity policy. Colorado just came out with theirs just a couple weeks ago, but there is the final details are being coming out. Do you think that it's going to be more like California and things of that nature in Texas, where each state is going to mandate its own cybersecurity policy that everybody has to apply to?
For now. So like, I mean, if you're asking my prediction, yes, for the extended period of time, I'm saying 12, 18 months, certainly through the midterms, probably through the 2024 election. I'm not predicting federal move on this. Let's take a quick moment and just, you know, I'll dive in because you ask and I'm a nerd. You know, like the EOs are designed to use the power of government spending to influence policy, right? Because it's not a law, it's guidelines. If you think about the president as CEO of the government, which is a really big business, he can say, these are the rules of the way we buy stuff. That's his job, right? He can say, this is what we buy, this is what we don't buy. Like he can do those kinds of things. That's what an EO does, is that it enforces saying, I'm telling my department, you know, my HR department or my buying department, these are the rules I want you to use. And we're going to use the power of our spending to make that happen. So that if you're buying from us, you've got to comply with this way of doing business. You're right. It doesn't affect the larger business because it's not a law. That's not what EOs do. That's where, unless it's going to come out of Congress, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate working together to pass something, it's not a law. Thus, I think it is way more likely that it will happen at the state level because states can move on these kinds of things. You ask, you know, California, New York, well, they're really big business. Those are really big states. California has a lot of power because of the number of businesses that are there and the size of their economy that you kind of end up having to conform with California if there isn't a federal standard. But I think there's going to end up being a bunch of different versions of this to different states. I tend to like it coming from the federal level because I think it's easier for us as business owners to manage that. I have a bias, of course, to my own region. I'm in Northern Virginia. When I ran my MSP, I had to be compliant in three localities at all times. I had to do DC, Maryland, and Virginia on everything because I had customers in all three. So I like federal laws because I've just practically lived through the complexity of three different states. That sucks. So to your thinking, like, do I think it's going to happen federally? No, they can't get together to agree on dinner. So much less thinking that they're going to actually get to, because again, that gets into politics and I won't dive too much down that way, but unless we incentivize them to solve those problems, they're not going to. All right. So we were talking, that's the regulation bit. Let me do my middle bit then, because I said there were three issues. The middle bit is, look, the reason I'm delivering my message around on-premise the way they are is you're coming with a very reasoned, smart, subtle argument around the choice of technology in that, right? And I will completely agree with you. And I'll go, you're smart enough to do that stuff. You're making really good, intelligent decisions. And when I look across the landscape, and I say with a bit of a smile going, a quarter of guys are losing money at this, right? If I give guidance that says, well, you know, if you're smart enough and you're able to put it together and you can do on-prem, there's going to be too much of this community that goes, well, the expert says it's okay, right? And what I'm also pushing back is there's a lot of vendors who are doing what they are paid to do, which is sell software, which will encourage people to buy any way they can sell them, right? They will not tell a small provider who should not be running their own on-prem server, well, I won't sell to you because I don't think you're going to be able to take this weapon of mass destruction and not use it correctly. Of course, they're going to sell it to them. Everybody would do that, right? Of course, they're going to sell it to them. So I feel it's important for me to send very direct guidance of, I think it's insane. I just think it's insane. And if you've got a reason to tell me, the analyst, that I'm smarter than you, Dave, and I can figure this out, go forth, man, kick ass, take names. But if I'm giving general guidance to the market, that's my take. That's a bad idea. It is far riskier than doing it than a cloud solution, right? So my guidance is intended to be bold, to give market direction, right?
And yeah, again, you're speaking to the masses, and I just want to take it that Dave Stovall said I'm smart. So there we go.
Then we get into the third bit, right? And then we get into kind of the vendor bit of this, right? I am going to put the responsibility on the solution provider market and say, you're buying these tools. You're taking the compromises that they are giving, and you're saying, I am willing to take the risk by giving you my money in exchange for that piece of software, right? You've got your requirement in your head. You know what you want, right? You know the way you should do it, but you make the risk analysis that says, well, I can't get what I want, but I want these other things. So I will give that software vendor my money for a piece of software that does not meet all of my requirements. And I have now assumed the risk of that. And what my video, the reason I put the video out the way that I did, and I really hope everyone takes this to heart, is I am not blaming Kaseya for anything on this.
They slept.
But my challenge is to the MSP market. Own your decisions and your decisions here. You want to change it? If you cancel your contract with these software vendors and figure out another solution, because you're smart as hell, guys, all of you are. You're smart. You understand this. You're a technologist. You can come up with solutions to this problem. And you make them irrelevant, they're either going to adapt or die. And right now, we're in this portion where I think the market has gotten complacent. And I sort of smile and go, guys, I make these predictions. That's what the videos are for. In my December prediction video, I said that I thought the RMM market was going to get disrupted this year. Look what happened. but my statement was this, is I think the market, I recognize that the market was compliant because the vendors were not investing in anything new. I did an analysis of all their press releases, and they did more announcements about hiring new execs or changes to their partner programs versus creating new things, right? Or in buying companies. That was the other thing they would do, is they buy stuff. And the moment they buy stuff, we all snicker about it, right? They buy stuff. That's it. That thing is no longer getting developed.
Talking about IT like that. Come on.
I didn't even name a vendor because you could, listener, you could plug in all kinds of acquisitions to that statement. And my statement is true. The moment it gets bought, development ends, because that is the PE playbook. R&D is expensive. And if you're trimming for cost and you're optimizing for profit, the easiest thing to do is not build more stuff. Just go buy it, cross-sell, up your revenue at the top. You do really well. It looks good.
Did you read the article out of Bloomberg that our buddy here, Brian Weiss, was quoted in about the Kaseya incident?
I think I did. But Brian, if you'd like to throw in there, I'd love for you to weigh in.
part of that article, and then Brian, I'll let you hop in on that because I know that's your jam. Kaseya has seemingly offloaded programming and R&D to Minsk, Belarus, and the Ukraine, which are inherently sympathetic or on the side of Russia. How do you feel about that, if it's true, and the fact that federal agencies and the U.S. Air Force uses VSA?
If it is true, right, they would not be alone. I would point to reporting from the same organization about a large publicly traded organization that was involved in a breach earlier this year.
There have been so many.
Perhaps the U.S. government was very interested in that particular one.
Tyler Technologies or SolarWinds?
You have named two companies, one of which is correct. But my point is that, you know, there's this element of like, am I surprised? No. Financial motivation is to find low cost development organizations, find the lowest cost way to deliver the solution. They have executed the business plan that they are motivated to do so. If you like, this is all finances. This is all running the PE playbook. I'm not surprised by this stuff. And by the way, neither is the market. As I highlighted in my video, like we've been talking, like ProPublica and CISA all highlighted this risk back in 2018.
Yeah, and the FBI came out with massive, massive campaigns about it. So I mean, it's been all over the place. I mean,
yeah.
And sorry, I'm about to trump all over Brian. So Brian, go, you do your thing about Kaseya real quick before I go on a completely different tangent.
I mean, I don't know. I spent 3 years, you know, telling my story to the industry, trying to tell other MSPs, you know, things I've learned so they don't have to learn the hard way. But I've always kept kind of the vendor name out of it. This is the first kind of public story I mentioned. Okay, it was Kaseya that happened, right? And I even had some peer group members reach out to me that know me very well. They're like, wow, I never even knew that was Kaseya. But one of the reasons I did it, regardless of the potential vendor blowback I might get, because there is politics involved in the vendor space. My personal feeling is I feel like these vendors, you know, and maybe I also feel like you've been giving them a little too much slack, but in this particular call, I feel like they need to start taking ownership over the fact that they're enabling our industry to be complacent about security by being complacent themselves. And, you know, we should have something like what Microsoft has, where you log in and there's a security center and it's telling you all the things you have configured wrong. or what you need. You know what I mean? I mean, there's best practices with any product or software to harden it for security. And MSPs, you know, we came from doing things in-house where we had like a firewall and an antivirus and a backup, and we felt like we could protect things, to, okay, we're going to move out to the cloud to gain these efficiencies and gain extra security,
right?
Because it's now security we're depending on these cloud vendors to handle for us that we normally handled in-house.
Right.
And, but yet we're handing it off to this, these vendors that are complacent with security in their own actions. Therefore, it trickles down to us as the MSP, and we're having to find out about it the hard way. And then now react because of it, right? And knee-jerk react in some cases,
right? I want to say, like, you're not wrong in the way that I'm delivering the message is really intentional, like, because I don't want to spend a bunch of time shaking my fist at vendors. What I want to do is actually make changes in people's businesses that make them able to independent without these guys. I always sort of quip, I don't spend my time worrying about CEO X and how much money he's made. I worry about the guys like you guys on the call, right? And if I spend all my time worrying about what the vendor should do, well, I mean, I can advise them, right? But I actually know the way that they're compensated. And I look at the flow of money and I'm just some guy in my basement, right? Making podcasts, right? Like I say that with a bit and go, like, they're not going to change. They're making bank. Like if we believe our statement of we're hardcore capitalists, we're here to make money, we're playing the game. Like, they're playing the game, right? And so, but the people that can change are like the three of you and all of the listeners, right? Like, is we can change our behavior and not reward them, not shake our fists at them, but change what we do. My video is about the idea of, and Shiva, you sort of threw that out, is like, I think the RMM is dead. I think clinging to it is like this old thing. And I think this is an opportunity to take a moment and look at the way you deliver your services and deliver the way you go to market and decide what risks you want to take and work with partners that are interested in taking the, you know, and vendors, right? But who are actually willing to make changes to their business. In my video on risk, I am not endorsing, I am simply offering a different way of doing business. I like what Sentinel One is doing with an actual warranty, right? They put some skin in the game. I got a million dollar warranty on breaches. I am not making a technical analysis. I'm not telling everyone to go out. What I'm saying is there's an example of a way of a product and service you can engage with where the vendor has some skin in the game. Yeah. Maybe it could be as simple of as demanding of these vendors as of like, look, how are you putting money up to handle breaches? How is the executive team, you know, dinged if you're not compliant with these things or these kinds of things happen? What's your insurance policy that covers me? Make them have skin in the game. And if they won't, don't assume the risk on their behalf, right?
Yeah. And that's exactly what we kind of dive into. So the, you know, Brian has seen me do it extensively, and Shiva has as well, you know, where we'll be on a call with a vendor, you know, and I'll ask them flat out, you know, are you a safe harbor? If somebody like me goes poking around your network, starts finding stuff, are you going to sue me because I freaking disclose stuff to you? You know, and these are, I think that's kind of the point of this podcast. And, you know, even though we are, and especially me, I am the one that will call the shit, the spade, whatever you want to call it, you know, I don't care. You know, freaking comes to you, I just don't care. You know, if you're garbage, you're garbage. I think, you know, what Brian put, and I'm going to expand on that. I think more and more companies in and out of the MSP space, you know, if you're a software vendor and you supply a product, you should be able to say, look, just like Microsoft does, you know, here's our solution, it's insecure as shit.
Right.
But here, go over here, and here's all the crap you need to do to secure it. There's nobody out there. I mean, again, seriously, take it outside of MSP. Freaking Salesforce doesn't do it. HubSpot doesn't do it. Right. You know, all these other guys, none of them are doing it like Microsoft. And I think Microsoft's leading the way. I agree. We need to educate the MSPs. Like, these are the fucking questions you need to start asking your vendors.
Yes.
And if you're not,
I'm right there with you, and I want to stand side by side. And one of the, you know, and push for is these are the, we need to be asking very different questions. I rail constantly, and guys, I lurk in all the groups, right? Like, I'm trying to keep an eye. I'm in the Reddit groups, I'm in the Slack groups, I'm in the Discord groups. I'm listening. The number of times people are debating, well, does it do this feature? Does it do that feature? Does it? And I'm looking and going, you are wasting so much valuable time. It should be used on. By the way, these are all just fine tools. They all suck about the same, right? They're fine.
Some suck more than others.
But they all.
You could say I'm looking at you, Automate.
But actually, the question is, they all suck. So let's actually have some conversations around these important things, rather than the debate over, you know, the other debates, right? And let's have these discussions and focus here. And by the way, vote with your wallet. Buy these things. And
speaking of voting with your wallet,
right?
You came from the vendor space.
Yep.
We know that MSPs are too childish and petulant in general to play well with each other.
Yep.
That's a given. I mean,
except when they do.
Yeah, but you don't have that critical mass that you were talking about.
Right.
So
right.
I want to talk about getting to that critical mass.
Okay.
To me, the end of the road is a self-governing organization.
Yep.
That we control.
Yep.
We write the rules.
Yep.
And if you want to do business with us as a vendor, meaning our organization and our members, just like the medical boards and everything else.
Yep.
You have to be approved by us to sell into us.
Yep.
And if your product, it's like just like what the government does.
Yep.
You want our money? This is what you need to check off. Now, is a logical step to getting to a self-governing organization is to perhaps put together regional co-ops or buying groups. So you get that, how do I put this?
You get
that cooperation amongst the MSPs.
So here's what I think the strategy should be. Okay. And my standard statements, guys, of I'm not 100% right. I'm offering perspective to try and jumpstart the idea. This is the play I think works. I think what you're actually doing is you're focusing on the creation of some kind of code of ethics, as well as some baseline standards that you want from an operational perspective. I will plug him for a moment. My good friend Carl Polichuk has a draft set of legislation that he's floating about what he thinks that you could happen at the state house about some basics around the way that a state might look at keeping an eye on this. And the reason I think you build around the code of ethics and the standards, and you partner with insurance companies to make these the standards of the way providers can get cyber insurance, right? So that you can actually start having a business relationship where it's about that shared risk. Insurance companies would love to figure out some standards so that they're not paying out the ass and still sell you cybersecurity, right? Because they want to make money on some insurance policies. They've got to get that risk under control. The expertise would make a ton of sense. And I think that partnership brings enough providers together and aligns those financial incentives. And then the vendors have to be compliant to the standards that you've set in order for that group to use their software.
Eric and I, and I think Brian were part of another group that discussed this. We get together with the insurance companies. We show them a rating system, which is why CMMC was chosen. 5 levels.
Yeah.
You get your risk based on whatever level you are. I think that's a great idea. However, being as old as I am with the experiences I have, I would much rather build our organization first, get some legitimacy in there of how our standards do work. Then you go to an insurance company. I don't want to build anything with them because they're getting popped 10 ways till Sunday every day.
So I'm sort of giving an end target. I think you're right to break it down in terms of the steps we get there.
But right, one thing is that I want to go back to is, what do you think about the co-op idea? Because I think that's the simplest way to just get people together. And I know MSPs are driven by saving 25 cents on a $3 agent.
I mean, you give them
2 pennies, they'll sell their mother.
Let's do it
that way. Get them together.
Yeah. It's a great way to jumpstart it. The other way to do this is, and by the way, you know, like one of the reasons I interviewed, and I would encourage everybody to listen to it, is go listen to my interview last year with the Louisiana Secretary of State. This is the guy who got the law passed. What really resonated to me about the interview was he's a pro-business Republican who literally is just saying, I just do not understand even who's out there. The reason I want registration and disclosure is literally, I just don't even know who to talk to. There's all these people out there serving my local cities, my local governments. I don't even know who they are. So when I'm dealing upstream with the FBI, CISA, like doing those bits at a state level, he goes, I literally don't even have all the contact information or know who the relevant players are. We can get started with very simple moves by owning it. And I think it, however you get there, right? Co-ops is one great way to help save money. Just could be as little as a list, a registration, and some basic ethics. And you iterate over time. By the way, that's technology, right? We're good at that. We're good at iterate, improve the process. These should be all of the skills managed services providers are really good at. So however we get there, it's not going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Iterate, keep improving, and start working on it. And you're right. Stop wasting time on the 2 cents we're trying to debate over that antivirus versus this other antivirus. Who cares?
But Webroot is trash.
Look, I love it. But you'll notice I just don't buy it anymore. I just don't care. Like they're all.
You're not wrong. You know, it's a cesspool of a industry. Not that we're any different from any of the other guys, right? I just think.
But let me be, because I can be Debbie Downer, but let me also be a little bit of like, I love this industry, and let me tell you why.
The money.
This is the group of people that actually make communities work. Like really, I saw this morning, there was the story of a local animal shelter, literally, who's dealing with the fallout on the ransomware. And they're like emailing around asking for all of their clients and patients to send in their pets' records. And it just like, I read that and it just breaks my heart, because it's like, that's people's lives, right?
Why,
like,
does it break your heart? I want to really get into this because I'll tell you why that pisses me off.
Well, because it's our job is to help with technology. And I think people want that. And we want to leverage technology to grow business. And it's proven to make businesses better, and they grow better, and they engage better. And I want us to be part of the solution, because I know that the providers that are dealing with all this are the guys that work 70, 80, 90 hours a week for their clients and bend over backwards and like just kick ass to make a difference.
I really think that's romanticizing bullshit, because maybe. I am willing to bet if you go through the emails between that veterinary clinic and their provider, there are many proposals that were sent over. No, we're not going to spend money on this. That's too expensive. No. And then you have the service provider on the other end saying, okay, fine. What kind of money can I get out from you? I'll just do the bare minimum to get paid.
We can both be right at the same time. And that's
not actually this time.
Well, because I think this it is actually also really true. Is you're right, right? But we as the good, at some levels, the good providers also need to help hold up the difference. Like, by the way, if we get in the DeLorean and we go back to the 1800s, you're describing doctors, right? Like on the Wild West, there were a bunch of guys that were like hacks, and there were other ones that really cared about their customers, and you could not tell the difference. And how did they fix that? American Medical Association. How did lawyers fix it? American Bar Association.
Both of those professions still haven't fixed it from a technology standpoint. They look at us as a cost center.
Sure.
And they're still rolling with Yahoo and Gmail.
Totally, totally agree. Except for the ones that I find that don't, right? And like, and then there are ones that are doing really great things with technology. And so it can be true that both statements can be true at the same time. And the reason I focus on the optimistic side is not because I want to be like, you know, ignoring the problems, is I want to focus on the things that I can make a difference on, right? Like, and so like the areas where I can make things a little bit better and get us a little bit closer. And that's it. I enjoy doing that bit. Right. And you're right. Cause you're right. It's bad, but there's also bits where it's good. And I know if we're working there too, I don't know. It's how I sleep.
I will say
so
that.
If I can interject real quick too, cause this is a question that's been burning inside of me that I want to scream from the mountaintop. When are we going to get to the point when we are literally slapping the crap out of MSPs who do not walk away from these cheap, inefficient clients that refuse to spend money and putting themselves online? And I'll advocate this, because take this whole Kaseya thing or take any of the ConnectWise crap or whatever. I'm an instant response. So I deal with this crap all the time. I'm dealing with the companies that have been compromised because, and this is one of my latest ones, it fucking blows my mind that even as of today, there is a client or a prospect that we have that we are in negotiations. that literally has 72 workstations in their medical facility that right. every last device is running KMS Pico because the MSP wanted to save a dollar because they just whatever. Yeah. I'm like, when are we going to start saying you as a technologist, as an MSP, as a network administrator, either you start standing up and say, look, this is the minimum of whatever, and give them the proverbial FU if they are not going to stand up. Stop going, stop racing to the bottom of the fucking barrel, because that doesn't help any of us.
I think that's really why we need to build that self-governing organization, tying with the insurance companies to rate that risk. But that's a 10-year program. That's not going to happen overnight.
And we keep talking about this, and we're at least 5 years into it, mm-hmm. and dick has been done. At least we'll be halfway there by now. What's stopping us from doing it today?
The people that bang this drum the loudest are the ones that enable the bullshit and sell the pizza.
Yeah. And by the way, those are my statements of it's all follow the money, all financial incentives, right? There are groups making money off of this current situation. That is, I mean, look, cybersecurity products, right? Make tons of money by having this be chaos.
Well, look at compliance. I mean, that's right. driving more cybersecurity spend than anything right. else. And compliance is doing anything to drive security.
I get yelled at when I go and go, guys, this is what regulation is. This is what it creates a floor. And I go back to my analogy. You don't like chemicals dumped in the water. You don't like customers being able to do whatever you can. You got to have some rules of the road. Those come from a floor that is set by regulation that helps get the market going. And how should that create done? Because by the way, worse in one way than no regulation is bad regulation, right? And bad regulation then is just a bunch of hoops to jump through that doesn't make a difference. And so that's where my continued point is going to be is MSPs, IT service providers, if you're right, have to come together, have to put aside the garbage and start working on this problem. And it's a long road. But I'm also convinced that those that do it and lead here are the ones that are going to reap the benefits over time.
So we need to create a trade association is what I'm hearing.
That's my thinking. Yes. Yeah. Or make one change, right? And by the way, make one change, meaning financially motivate them. That's their what their memberships are demanding and make it happen or create one. You can either one, build or buy, right?
So outside of, at least for, we'll say U.S., based associations or groups.
Sure.
Is there anybody really outside of ASCII? I mean, I know Tech Tribe has got a huge, massive following, but he's in Australia. You know, he's an awesome dude. You know, respect what sure. he does a lot. Yeah, but in the States, is there anybody else except for ASCII?
I mean, the answer is, I mean, you know, you theoretically CompTIA, right, is a membership organization. Remember their major business certifications, right? So that's a piece of it all. So there's CompTIA, they're a potential player. ASCII's another player. You know, theoretically, the MSP Alliance is an organization that looks at this space. You know, you could look at you know, some of the media organizations theoretically have some of this. You know, Channel Pro and so have pieces of this. You know, you could look at it from like organizations like, you know, MSP Geek. You could talk to Tech Tribe as an external piece, but could have a subgroup working on this. I feel like there's lots of pieces out there that are probably going to need to be combined.
I feel like you have to create the organization and then go out to those gentlemen or those groups you just announced and say, hey, why don't you bring your membership in, or can we post this to your group? And, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think pieces of this, this is not a slam dunk. Right. There's not a one answer ready for us off the shelf. There's pieces. We're going to have to build some stuff. Have I exhausted you guys? Nice.
No, I'm trying to be. So let's take one thing. So we've all circled around that. OK, so we've all, just about everybody in this room, I'd say, agree that Microsoft is the de facto potential replacement for RMM. Granted, you cannot, you know, push out, you know, scripts in real time and do some of the monitor, you know, Intune's got some work it's got to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is, you know, we've talked, even us three and, you know, some other circles and stuff like that, you know, Intune will probably be a 100% RMM replacement within 3 to 5 years, if not less.
I think they may be a lot closer than we think. And I think really highly of what Microsoft is doing. So I'm definitely, and I, and I, particularly when I look at the big companies from the strategic, you know, strategic sense, if I'm looking at big tech, right, to understand who we could align to, because my thinking there is okay, I got to look at the cloud providers. I got to understand who's got a play that makes sense for us in this space, right? Amazon doesn't make it. Their partner DNA isn't quite there. I use partner.
They are a nothing burger because they don't have an OS that we're all using in mass like Windows, quite honestly.
Yeah, but I guess I'm so, because I'm, by the way, I'm a Mac guy. Like, so I'm a little less focused. I don't care so much about the endpoint. I actually think about the workspace as the OS that matters, right? So I'm thinking the layer that the business layer where the company operates is the layer I think matters. I don't think operating system matters anymore. I think you're debating. The reason I dismiss Amazon is that they don't have like a Google Workspace. They don't have an O365, M365. Like, they just don't have a play in workspace that matters. And I didn't even cite this on Business of Tech, but I was watching because there's a rumor going around that they're going to partner with Dropbox and Slack to come together to create kind of a workspace that might make them a player. But I think that's the space we worry about. It's why I kind of like Google, because you got Google Workspace. I definitely like Microsoft because they're the obvious piece. Your operating system that I care about is the business level one, right? The place that my data lives, where your business process goes, like that kind of stuff. I would be a bad analyst if I didn't cite, well, there is Alibaba, right? There's stuff going, but I don't think we're looking at ones coming out of China for a US market.
Coming out of Minsk in Belarus for Kaseya. Might as well just bring the Chinese in too.
We could, right? It's a play. I think IBM, Oracle, their clouds probably aren't big enough to really matter in here. And then you circle back around and it's like, God, I love what Microsoft's doing, right? Like I just love what Microsoft's doing. And of the companies, they're mature enough because they're on the other side of antitrust, right? They're the only ones not getting in trouble right now.
They've gone through it. They know how to structure things to stay away from it.
Exactly.
I mean, that's real.
And we beat up on the partner term, right? But they actually have through channel built into their DNA, right? Like they get the idea of
they created an industry for us all to have a job in. I mean, exactly. No one else has done that.
Right. And so for me, Microsoft is kind of just the obvious, like they just make sense. And why would I fight them for some, you know, fight to go find some better solution when they're like so close to that. So thus I love them from a workspace bit, despite the fact I hate Teams. But I get them from a workspace perspective. I think you can totally build a business there. I think that's the bit that matters. I think I like what they're doing with Intune. I'm super intrigued with this. I mean, we're recording as Inspire is about to happen, and I'm super intrigued with what might happen with Cloud PC, you know, in terms of them. And they may just take over all the management, right? And you're just running your business environment in a Cloud PC and run it on, like, if I, and again, I'm projecting way out to where the tech may go.
I have a question for you based on that.
Yeah.
And this goes back to RMM. What does any MSP really need an RMM for these days?
That's the question I'm asking. Like that legitimately is the question I'm saying.
Other than hopping into someone's user experience.
Right. Like, what do you need them for? and it's funny because the moment I ask that, by the way, the religion comes in and everyone says, patching!
But they're a bunch of fucking fanboys. They need something to rally around because they can't stand on their own two feet.
So my answer to that, by the way, my answer to that is the technical director for the UK's National Cybersecurity Center at their conference just like 3 months ago stood on stage and said, I think everyone should turn on automatic patching. Like, I just think automatic patching should be the thing.
I saw this last night with someone asking you this in one of the slides.
And I look and I go like, because everyone gets all mad at me, right? Oh, there's so many problems. And I'm looking going like, okay, I get it, right? Like,
you don't get it, I think, and I'll tell you why. And I'm just being more facetious here, okay? Yeah. So it's not an attack, but you didn't ask them the question. How many of you MSPs are actually testing your patches as opposed to leaving them for a 7-day delay to read all of the websites to say, hey, this is blue screening of death.
And how many? Because I could tell you there's more than not. They just turn on patching and walk away just like a fucking backup system. They don't test it. Be like, oh, damn, I got 60 failed patches.
And no reboots in a year.
I mean,
so jumping in real quick on RMM. I think the patching is a dead horse, by the way.
Okay, cool. Good. I'm glad you guys feel that way, because that's the bit when I say this stuff, it's the bit that I get attacked on so much. So that's why I start there, because I actually think it's like not that important.
For me, RMM is all the devices I'm managing, although it doesn't do mobile devices. So I rely on Intune for that. So then I'm wondering, okay, well, what device management things can I do in Intune? Well, right now they don't really have support for network devices. So that's the major hole that I see right now that we rely on RMM heavily for, is anything that's not an OS, you know, Mac, Android, iOS, or Windows.
So this is where I get into the philosophy of this, right? And I'm going to put my academic hat on, guys, and I'm freely admitting, like, this is me being an analyst, this is me being an academic on this kind of stuff. But I want to point out to you that philosophically, the way I think management is moving is baseline configuration to access data. And what I mean by that is you look at like the way Intune works, right? Where it's much more around policy enforcement, that unless you hit a certain policy, you can't perform actions. And in a way, it sort of pushes away the responsibility. I just assume that the world is like this cesspool of endpoints and they all suck, right? And like, they're all just horrible virus-ridden places that I don't really want to go. As long as the access to my data is so pinhole that they can only get to the right thing at the way they want, and they're restricted out, that's zero trust, zero trust security. And I know it's hard to get to, and I know it's philosophically different, but for me, it's the idea of embracing that and stop worrying so much about enforcement against the endpoints and worry much more against protection against the core assets and making sure that the exposure is so limited that we're only allowing things through when they meet certain conditions. And thinking that way, it's a very different approach. But if we think that way, it flips this whole script, right, in terms of what we have to worry about.
I have a question here. We all agree that the RMM either needs to die or be redone. What if MSPs or IT providers started using real enterprise-grade network gear that had an API to feed into a PSA to give that discovery data, that asset management information, and you use Intune to pull the device data that you know of and call it a day. And then you use a managed SOC that's not Rocket Cyber with a network tap that can go out and map your network for you. To me, that's as simple as you can get. Yep. And be all encompassing.
So by the way, this is where I get to the point where I say, look, I love it, right? It's an idea. I love it. And what I'm saying is what I'm hoping comes out of all of this, my stance in the market, the reason I'm making the videos on it, is I want everyone re-examining this. And I think that is one of several possible solutions to this, right? There's probably going to be a couple of different ones. And I will look at the three of you and go, you're way smarter at this than I am at this point, right? I'm not day-to-day operational on this stuff. I expect, though, that you're smart enough to figure out new ways. What I'm focused on, the reason I'm talking the way that it is I want people to question the assumption, right? Because there's just this assumption of, well, I need the RMM. Well, I need the PSA.
Dave, the Kool-Aid is real.
It is. Channel. I sold it. Like, look, I can say, because at the times when I sold it, it was true, right? Like, and I look at that but what was true in the past is not necessarily true now. And the market changes. Well, I like it. It'd be boring if it was the same all the time. And I'm just the one saying, like, look, I think the market's changed. I think this things that I used to, that I approach, that I advocated, is no longer true because new data has been presented to me. And I'm presenting my new data and my new perspective for other people to say, go forth and make some money with this new idea.
So I got a question for the group. And just because it's my own ignorance, I don't know. You know, we all of us here are 365 shops. No big deal, whatever. Yep. You know, all action pack or whatever.
Yep.
Well, last time I looked earlier this year, there's nothing in the GC workspace that matches Intune to any degree, unless you're doing the Chrome OS.
You're doing Chrome OS. So
what would a Google shop do, short of changing to Microsoft? I mean, I know I have customers in my IR right now that, you know, if they could change everything to Chrome OS, they would, just to get away from Microsoft, because they just hate them. I think they have birds flying or bats flying over, you know, radiating with 5G radiation or something. But
I think in that case, Google has taken the approach of Dave here, and they want to create that business workspace, which is their cloud. Microsoft has said, we want to own and operate the business workspace, and we want to own and operate the device or the OS you reach that workspace from.
Yeah. And it's just slightly different philosophies. And by the way, remember, like in a Google world, you know, you can still use like sort of policy enforcement around some of this stuff in terms of access. I'll sort of smile. I'm small enough. My little business is on Google. You know, I also happen to like Zoom. So there's other reasons to it too. And you know, I don't have to build out a large infrastructure because it's just me, but I can have policy enforcement around access to the data, must be 2FA, like must be audited, like that kind of stuff. And then additionally, you're also, there's the implied blind spot there of macOS, right? Which you can also do policy enforcement on an enterprise level on Apple stuff, which is kind of oftentimes connected with the Google world. Right. So you could take that. And again, this is where, by the way, we could brainstorm all of this. I trust that there are smart technical minds in this community that once they get challenged to think differently, will come up with innovative ways of this. And by the way, I also know there are some smart vendors that have also identified this flaw and are starting to figure this out.
Yeah, I figured. I just didn't know if it was anything being put together already, you know, for those non-Microsoft shops. So
the G Suite, I look at it as they stop at the browser, right? The Chrome browser. And that's essentially why these Chromebooks are able to be managed, is because all they are is a browser.
Yeah. And by the way, you can enforce policy against Chrome too. So like you can just access that. And this is my statement of like, you can kind of not care about the endpoint so much as long as the portal into the workspace is secure. Like you can just sort of not worry about the endpoint so much, and it becomes a lot less important. And particularly because, I mean, I think people devalue the other endpoint, like the mobile device. Like people always are dismissive about the phone, but you look at so many people, their actual way in to do so much stuff is that little slab of glass in their pocket.
And that's where Microsoft is going to win, because they folded MDM into whatever you want to call it. Into that Azure AD.
Well, they clearly see the future of all of this.
They're making the future, I think.
Yeah, and they're marching towards it. It's just, I mean, I think they're always slower than we like. And by the way, there is always opportunity right ahead of Microsoft, right? Like those vendors, those software vendors that are in that space that are ahead of Microsoft always do well. I mean, I made this point when it was announced that I thought it was a huge deal when now Enable did an integration with Microsoft and around Intune, and their solution was, well, we're just seeding all of that space to Intune. Like they integrated it and you did all that work in Intune. And I smiled and goes, that's their strategy? They just gave up all that space. That like clearly validates that we're going that way. They recognize that we need to have that stuff, but they're not going to build anything. Wow. Like, I think that's a big deal. So
Datto deprecated their mobile device management and their RMM, and I'm pushing like crazy to get them to do an integration with Intune, trying to be a part of how that gets developed so it doesn't fall short. But yeah, I mean, why reinvent the wheel, especially with something like mobile devices where you've got all these different manufacturers, all these different OS versions, you've got certificates that need to be in place. There's a lot more to an MDM product than an RMM product, for sure.
And by the way, this is the conversation I want the community to be having, right? This is the conversation I want us to get into around what's the future, drive the requirements, ask vendors to support us in that. And it may not be the legacy ones too,
right? Breaking too many fallacies by asking for that. The MSPs are too comfortable saying our value is testing that patch that we read on a Reddit subreddit. Okay.
And this is where I'm going to get very tactical. And I go, yeah. And guys, the group on here, the providers, go kick their ass. Like, go kick their ass. Go make the money. Go be better. Like this is where I get enthusiastic again and goes, like, I want to change the industry. I love having that conversation. But at the same time, if I give tactical advice to smart MSPs that go forth, I'm going to wipe the floor with the complacent guys. I love it.
I have a question for you, Dave. You've been around this business for a long time.
Oh God, I'm old.
Older than me, I would assume. On which side of 45 are you on?
Oh, I'm right on it.
All right, there you go. Older than me. What are your thoughts on all of the thought leaders in the MSP channel? All of the experts in the MSP channel?
Guys like me?
Yeah. You have a little bit of pedigree. And by a little bit, I mean a lot. You know, you came from the MSP. You did a lot of things.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And I appreciate that.
There are a lot of companies now that are selling product to MSPs because they once ran a successful MSP and their products are dog shit.
I can speak to my own personal philosophy on this. Okay. So when I sold my MSP, and it was the end of 2011 going into 2012, I had a lot of people ask me, why are you going to go be a consultant? And my statement was, I ran one MSP. Like, I don't get me wrong. I do peer groups. I wrote a book. Like, I do all this volunteering. I ran one MSP. I don't believe that running one MSP makes me an expert on all things. And the reason I went to work for a vendor was I wanted to learn a lot more. I wanted to learn about how that side of the business worked. And there's a reason why now I don't do consulting like this. I do a news and commentary podcast because I think I solve two problems. The first is I don't think MSPs spend enough time focused on the actual important news, right? Like we're spending way too much time worrying about whose partner program has changed a lot and who's bought who in the marketplace and what channel chief works. Who cares? None of that makes any of you money on a day-to-day basis. That's why I talk about the future of work and regulation, all that stuff, right? I think there isn't a space talking about IT services there. And the second thing is that I offer my perspective as a guy who's done some of this work. I do not present it as the one solution to all things. And so my statement on that is my governing philosophy. This is, I do not think I have all the answers. I think I ask good questions. And so I offer that to the world. If somebody thinks their one way is the way, I just think they're always wrong. And it's an absolute that can actually be true. There isn't one way because there's so many smart people and so many different kinds of businesses and so many different ways to go at it. And I just don't buy into it. Now, I will always also see a system is always better than no system, right? And it's why this space does really well is that to somebody who doesn't understand marketing or sales or technical delivery, if you don't have anything, buying something is always better. And that's why this space flourishes. And that's why people deliver some value. And I won't be completely dismissive of the value of helping someone who has nothing now have something. Is that fair on my philosophy of the, sort of that space?
That's a really good non-answer, but I'll take it.
Because there's value to be had in everybody's business if it's the right one to the right
person. I guess, you know, my thing is just there's a proliferation of too many experts, which is leading to too many cooks in the kitchen. And that's my issue. Oh,
that I'll 100% agree to, right? I guess but by the way, it's also the sign of a healthy opportunity when there's a lot of aftermarket players. Like aftermarket consultants and add-ons and all that stuff, it actually tells me that this is a pretty healthy market and there's a lot of opportunity and money to be had because those people are there.
You say that and I just hear there are a lot of suckers.
Yeah.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
Both true statements, right? Like both statements can be true at the same time. So,
all right, guys, I have to jump off soon. So I guess anything anyone else would like to add?
No, yeah, sorry. I've been kind of MIA. I've got, you know, a couple things hitting me over here. So,
well, SolarWinds is having an incident right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting pinged about. This new zero-day flaw that's under attack. That's not part of Sunburst or anything like that. So, the gift of SolarWinds that keeps on giving. So, I'm sure
SolarWinds, or Enable SolarWinds.
SolarWinds, Orion. It looks like.
Yeah. Well, I said it. There will always be a new one.
You know, until we change. Here's a closing thought for me. Today's the last day to buy shares to get your Enable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is this meant to drive down the share price?
I think so.
Timing wise, at least
it makes sense.
But hey, what do I know?
We're a bunch of conspiracy theorists.
The simplest answer is always the true one, right? It generally falls in that line. I do think that our opposition in the cyber war is very smart. We do not give them nearly enough credit for being as smart as they are, right? If there is an impact that they can make, They're going to do it opportunistically to make money. They are a business. They are an incredibly worthy adversary. And we should understand that. And I don't mean to honor, but we should respect that adversary and not take them too light. Because
that's why I call the SolarWinds hack, the Orion one, beautiful and elegant.
Because I'm 100% with you. So beautiful, so well done, so well executed. It's amazing. I mean, and in the Kaseya one, in a way, you can actually see they made mistakes, right? Like those guys, they made some mistakes in there. And
I think that was a statement. Mm-hmm. I think Kaseya was a statement. I don't think they cared to get data exfiltrate. I think it was just.
Really, I think they were more successful than they intended to be.
I think it was just to say, hey, look at what we can do when we don't even try.
And that should be the message we all take away, and why I hope everyone is re-examining their choices. Because if that statement is true, and I'm with you, I believe it. If they can do more, we should be totally taking that seriously.
Yeah. All right. So
awesome, gentlemen. Well, Dave, how does those who don't know about you, again, how do they get in touch with you?
All three people that don't know about you.
I never assume everyone knows, and I really appreciate everyone's trust in listening and taking my opinion as worth listening to. If you're interested in what I do, please subscribe to the podcast. It's at businessof.tech. There is a big blue button. I'm on all of the podcatcher platforms. That is my core business, is producing that content for providers to give them some insight into that. You can also follow me on YouTube at youtube.com/MSP Radio. The podcast comes as a weekly video show, as well as the long form editorials are there as well. If you really like what I do, you can support me on Patreon. It's at patreon.com/MSP Radio, because I am here to serve this community. I've built a business that makes money when you guys are successful. So that's what I'm doing.
You know, I heard OnlyFans is a very thriving opportunity as well.
You know, nobody wants to see that.
Yeah, you choose the content you want to put on there. I'm just saying, you can put this content on there. You don't need to take the blazer off.
That is totally true. You know,
I have heard if you reverse it, you could have people pay you not to send images of certain items to other people.
Next business idea. I do listen to my Patreon.
Reverse engineering.
Guys, thanks for really appreciate you having me for the conversation and asking really smart questions. I love the conversation. I'm here to help on anything anybody needs.
Thank you for your time. Thanks again for joining us for the Cybersecurity Amplified and Intensified podcast.